Welcome to Rivcast, a Civilization podcast focused on its console platforms.
L Thrasher?
Scotty X?
CV. Should I go into that, or
sure? I mean, if it's boring, Dan will just cut it. So,
recording for episode 45 with Scotty X and Japanese.
We're going to talk about different civs match up with each other. We've been noticing.
Yep.
A couple of things. You know, we got tiers. We got civs that we feel that are in the top tier. China, Zulu, and America, with America being a cut above everybody.
Yep.
But that's the top tier. Then you got the top middle or upper middle tier. That's the Spanish, the Aztecs, and the Arabs.
Yep.
All of these tiers are real strong, but we haven't been in those tiers for a reason. Through experience, we've learned that the top three are just, you know, a cut above the bottom three that are also considered top. Although the bottom three can compete with any of them if they have a good game, good position, and good map setup. Me and Scotty, we played, what do you think, about 8 or 9 games with the Spanish versus the Chinese?
Yep, something like that, yep.
This was using the strategy with the Spanish where you bring single units with your galleon fleet. You know, build you maybe 5, 6, 8, or 9, depending on how much money you got, single legions. And while you're under Fortex, you might need 3 cities to do this because, you know, you might have a galleon out getting money, naming tiles and stuff. It's a very effective strategy, and it doesn't take that long to form an attack on your opponent. I think the Chinese won maybe once or twice, huh, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, and it was a lot to do with if China was close to the Spanish, then they could do that. They could use their extra population to hammer out some units and really put the pressure on and control the land. But if the Spanish had some distance, and in most games they did, it was pretty rough on the Chinese, unfortunately. Well, when I was China, it was unfortunate.
Right. And I also played with China a couple games. And as Scotty mentioned, the only one that I won, I was very close to him. And my horse only got on him before he could do anything. But in the other game, when I had distance, when I was China, or he had distance and he was China, once China landed its attack, we couldn't figure out a way to stop it. You know, one time I beelined for mathematics. Because the thing about that attack, it's like having, say you got 9 units, it's like almost having 9 horse armies. Because the legion, a veteran legion hits with an 8 with galleon fleet.
In a way, it's more powerful because when you land an archer in there and it's supported by the galleon fleet, your defense is huge as well. It's not just that your attack is strong.
And it's not a defense that legions can chop down. If I'm China and Scotty is Spanish and he lands, you know, 8 or 9 single units, and I have 3 legion armies ready, veteran ones, with, you know, maybe a veteran arch army or maybe 4 or 5 single veteran archers just so I can hold his attack down. It's still going to be so hard to stop his attack because every time I hit him, his defense is like 8 or 9. It's like having horse armies with 8 or 9 defense. It's like very hard for the Chinese to win. You know, we asked a couple of other players, like we asked Thrasher his opinion, and he was like that, you know, he would take China because if China has a good game, it's times where China already have steam power before you can even get your attack over there. But from our experience, from what me and Scotty saw, Spain was, they kind of had the upper hand, it seemed like.
In recent history, the Spanish in tournaments and this sort of thing, the Spanish have been moving up and up the rankings. They used to be the top of the normal civs, and then people considered Arabs and Aztecs were a bit better, and then the top three. But nowadays, if I play in a upper middle tier game against It's Denied or someone like this, I'm going to want to be the Spanish. We've played a series of games with Spanish versus Aztecs, like I played some with Morpork. It was just so hard to figure out anything to do with the Aztecs with the Spanish dominating on the sea. Same with the Arabs, Spanish again, dominate the sea and keep the pressure on you.
People have to remember the strength of the Spanish is the galleon fleet, the veteran galleon fleet.
With the extra bonus, yeah.
When you see that veteran galleon fleet just coming to the screen, it looks scary, you know. It's huge. It's big. It's really strong weapon early in the game if you can get on somebody.
I think in the old days, most people were playing the Spanish, getting out horse armies, running around the continent, just doing the normal stuff, getting out the galleon fleet a bit later. But nowadays, a lot of people are getting out that galleon really fast. The first one, they're gathering some gold, getting a galleon fleet up quickly, popping some legions onto it, whatever they can, go over to the city and just playing like you've suggested.
That attack is really mean. But on the other hand, I played some games with the Spanish versus the Zulu. I played them myself with Spanish versus Zulu versus Multi. Multi had the Zulu. These games weren't even close. Only one game did I even get to attack him. The Zulu just dominated every piece of gold on the map, every single game we played. And before we played, Multi was like, "You sure you want to do it?" And I was thinking, "Hey, man, the Galleon fleet, this and that." It didn't add up against the Zulu. And in the forums, they played Spanish Zulu series before, right?
Yep, we played a tournament and the Zulu destroyed the Spanish. Even then, we thought that the Spanish might have had a chance there because we didn't know the Zulu power quite so well at that stage. But the Zulu won left, right and centre. I felt very confident playing anybody, Thrasher or anyone using the Zulus.
I bet. I mean, if the Zulu can get those starts where they can pound on the Americans, you know, if they can get like surround them real early and don't let them get any gold, just starve them. Of course, if you have any choice, you're going to go with the Americans, but just saying.
That was quite interesting that the Zulu have proven again that they can kill Spain. Spain seemed to do all right against China. But the interesting thing is that it's conventional wisdom. And again, I would feel reasonably confident with China versus Zulu.
Exactly. China versus Zulu, it seems that the Chinese can just handle them.
In games I've played in the past, China sets up their start, Zulu comes, tries to pressure them, and then has no way of breaking through. And slowly the game slips away from the Zulu player. The China player just punishes them for that extra population bonus, and which isn't really a bonus, and for the fact that they can get their archers up and things, their defences, just too quick for the Zulus to be able to take them out.
And I think the one thing that people need to realise that the difference is between them is that when you have China versus Zulu, you can stop that attack with legions. If you have like two or three legion armies, you're going to be able to stop the Zulu attack. But two or three legion armies, you can't stop that Spanish attack. That's kind of the difference maker in it. Because even though we feel like the Spanish had us up on the Chinese when we were playing them with them, it's a reason that the Chinese is in the top tier and the Spanish are in the upper top tier. It's a reason for that, you know. But just the fact that when China was playing Zulu, China didn't need that much gold just to survive the Zulu attack. And then, you know, once they get their five techs and literacy and stuff, it was just China could win. Just outlast them and build some legions and bat them off. You can't do that versus the Spanish attack.
The other interesting thing that I've seen is again, we're talking about the Aztecs and the Arabs being put together in the same tier. And more recently, I've noticed that the Aztecs playing, particularly Arabs versus Aztecs, it's very difficult to see a way through the absolute incredible starts that the Aztecs can pull off with their 25 gold and their auto-healing units. They can just absolutely rip through the map at the beginning. And the Arabs, even though they've got all these great attacking bonuses, very often those attacking bonuses just aren't enough against a really good defender. A person who really knows what they're doing can just do what it takes with their auto-healing units to hold off your attacks.
Right. I think that most high-level players would definitely, not all of them, but a lot of them would pick the Aztec over the Arab. Because of what you're mentioning, that starting bonus is incredible starts, and Arabs can too, you know, and Fundy is huge, but
it's just not quite as fast. Yeah, it's faster than France and all these other civs, but fast isn't good enough against the Aztecs. You need to be America fast or be like China or Spain and have some real power coming soon in the game.
Right, because that, you know, that makes me think of the Aztec Spanish matchup.
Yeah,
I would take either one, but if I had to choose, I'm giving me the Spanish, you know.
Well, that's what I found as well, that the Aztecs get a good start, they get ahead. You think that you're in a relatively good position, but just slowly the Spanish trek on towards getting their galleon fleet up, getting their legions and or catapults or whatever onto those galleons. And then they start heading your way, and it's very difficult to work out a game plan to deal with it, because do you get your own galleon fleet up and fight them and probably lose 9 to 13.5? Or do you... You expand out and build some more cities, but then you're just giving them many attack points. Do not expand out, in which case you're going to get out-teched by them. It can get quite tough there unless you've got access to them to finish them off.
That comes down to that map positioning. But most games, if the Spanish get a little space, can bring a really mean attack really early. All elite strategy is all about attacking. It's just all about bringing some of your buddies over there to his neighborhood and attacking. That's what it's all about.
Recorded for episode 42 with El Thrasher, Scotty X, and Japanese.
That makes me think of something. Post on a forum about the number 7 sieve. And of course, Thrasher, you haven't been around, but I just wanted your opinion. After the top tier and the mid-top tier, who's your favorite?
So we're talking the one just below Spain, basically, or just below Spain, Aztec Arabs.
Just below Spain, Aztec Arabs.
Yeah.
It's been so long.
But generally, we're talking Germany, India, Rome.
Germany. I mean,
yeah, that's who I voted for too. They can just bring such a great attack.
Yeah.
Early and late.
Just so often you meet the guy really early and 1.5 versus 1.
On the forum, it was like most of the people that typed down their opinion, that wrote down their opinion, said Germany. But when you looked at the vote, it was 8-7 India for some reason. Mm.
India's pretty good, but I think Germany's better. You can get a bunch of March legions, and that's crazy. A bunch of March, Blitz, Infiltration, Legion. I mean, they won't all have all three probably, but just having the March on your legions is just incredible. Now you've got a whole bunch of half-cost horsemen.
Recorded for episode 44 with El Thrasher, Scotty X, Japanese, and Philip 23.
Now, when you guys are playing multiplayer, anyone who plays as England, I mean, all they have to do is get a quick archer army together, right? And then, I mean, are they not pretty much unstoppable until somebody can really tech up to heavy weaponry?
Not at all.
It depends. You can wear them down with a million units. You can't take them down with like two horse armies or something like that. That's not going to work.
Yeah, you won't have seen this in single player, but someone like Thrasher will turn up on your doorstep with six legion armies, vet legion armies, or something, and then hammer you with them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 like really fast on the timer, and your England archers or maybe catapult armies or whatever, but your England archers will eventually die.
Because what is the defense on that? It's 18, right?
22 and a half and a cap, I think.
You're not playing to get somebody with a barracks and an Agamemnon, right?
No.
That's just in the game of the week. That's just game of the week.
I mean, it could happen, but it's not going to be that common.
We're going to steal their Agamemnon.
I attack an Arthur army in London. It's a serious proposition. They're defending on a 3-2. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess we're going to try and out-expand them then. Might be difficult to beat your Arthur army.
But, I mean, even 22.5 is considerable. There's a lot of different things that you can do there. One thing is to bring a lot of units. All you have to do is, if you wound him once, he's down to 15, and now you are even a long odds, you have a chance of winning, like a 9-15. That happens sometimes. If you do it again, he's down to 7.5, and one legion army is going to kill him. So it's definitely doable. You need to be a little lucky, and you need to be faster because you don't want him healing, and you definitely don't want him choosing engineer if he gets elite or something like that.
But if he gets engineer, that means he won't be able to heal because there's no way he'll be faster than you at that point, right?
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, he could have healed before and then gotten another upgrade, but I mean, you need to go fast. In multiplayer, it's not just all about, can I take your capital? Oh, I couldn't, so I'm going to quit, or something like that. I mean, I guess some people play that way, but I mean, generally, it's what Scotty said is that if your capital is just a fortress and is not going to be taken down by early units, or at least not easily, maybe a better example would be if you had an Athens that isn't coastal, or something like that, with a hoplite army inside, and maybe walls from masonry. And I mean, it can get ridiculous, and you can't use naval support because it's not coastal, but he can still work the water tiles because, you know, of the courthouse. That's fairly impregnable. And then if he's got the wall on top of that, then he's up to 27 or something like that. I mean, it's, you know, that's going to be pretty hard to beat. But what you do is you can sit on his best tiles and then just build a million cities. And, you know, it's the same as in Game of the Week. If you build 30 cities, your tech is going to be way better than anyone else, no matter what. I don't care if you have the Colossus. I don't care if you have a university, whatever. I have 30 cities. My tech is better. So then you can have bombers or tanks or whatever you feel like.
Recorded
Retreat! Run away!
Retreat, yes.
Now, this is one I don't have any experience in, personally. Quite understand how you guys make use of that. I tend to go for adjusting the seed so I get a victory.
We're talking about more multiplayer, where if you bring a bunch of units to an opponent that has, let's say, a pike army, you might have to wear it down, so you might have to do some retreating to wear it down.
Yeah.
Yep. So you've tuned up to the guy city. He's got a pikeman army there. You can you attack, and then you make peace with him. Now you're going to get pushed out of his culture zone, which is maybe just one square out. If it's two squares out, obviously you're going to get pushed back to your nearest city. But if you get pushed just once, it looks like you get pushed back in the direction of the nearest something or other, like the nearest tile or the nearest friendly or whatever. I did quite a bit of testing of this, and it is quite difficult to tell in the testing because there are so many interesting things around that you could get pushed back towards. But yes, it looks like you're getting pushed towards like the naming tile or something like that. If you go back in the same direction as you got pushed, you'll probably be able to find something back there that's worth getting.
It's like a consolation prize. You didn't get the city, but here's 10 gold.
I mean, quite likely you're gonna come back and attack him. But if you know what those things are, so if you've come that way and you found a barb hut just straight before you came and attacked him, what are the odds of that? But still, maybe it was an AI. Start to make a guess that you're going to get pushed towards that object because it's particularly close. Or maybe you see a resource down the bottom or something, and you know that maybe you're going to get pushed towards that. This was a question that was asked to me on the forum when I am proposing doing some testing and getting some questions answered. So there's another one for you.
Okay.
Probably it's just marginal advantage in the actual game, but still.
The use here is probably something like you get a late horseman army together. It's not veteran.
Yep.
You go and attack an AI city, and obviously to do that you have to enter the culture. And you attack, you win a 6-5 battle, killing an archer, but you're wounded.
Yep.
And you don't want to stay there because the AI might just, it's late enough that they might just have something to counterattack you, might kill your horseman army. So you want to make peace, which does two things. One, it stops them from attacking you, which early in the game isn't real likely, but eventually it would happen. And number two, it takes them out of war preparation mode, because now you have eternal, everlasting peace, and they should go back to building a temple or whatever.
Yep.
So you make peace, and when you make peace, your unit is teleported out of the culture.
Hmm.
So this is talking about which direction you're going to move when that happens. And
yep.
It might not matter. It might matter.
Scenario that came to mind was maybe you're attacking the city on one side, and there's somebody else attacking. The other human is there or thereabouts. And you really don't want your horse to go and retreat in their direction, because that'll expose them. You want them to be retreating back your way, ideally back onto your archer or something. And then you go, okay, well, if I go retreat from this square, where am I going to end up? Am I going to be exposed? And in this case, it's say you go, you pop back and you land on your archer. Well, good. Go ahead with the piece.
Makes me think of something, a thread that was on the forum the other day. I wanted to get your opinion on it. So, you know how sometimes a person's culture is so big that you can't even start war with them. When you get in their culture, it actually pushes you out and you won't be able to start war. Have you seen that before?
A couple of times, yeah.
Right. It doesn't happen often. So, do you think that that's kind of shady to do? Do you think it's would you frown upon it if your opponent did it to you? What do you think about it?
My opponent has built such great culture that I can't find any of his units or any of his cities to declare war.
Say it's early and he has monarchy and his culture is just kind of big. And you got a horse army and probably could kill him if you could get in there, but he won't let you get diplomacy with him keep getting pushed out.
I'm okay with that. I think culture is very weak in the game already. And if it can be used for something good, I don't know, I think that might be okay. But the thing is, like, he can't go anywhere near you because you just attack the unit and then you're at war.
So. All right. Now your early advantage is gone, kind of, you know?
Well, okay. That's true. But then his culture was actually useful for once. I mean, how many games is culture useful? It's like tech.
It's rare.
It gets you the GP.
It gets you one GP. It gets you maybe
one.
If you have an extremely long game, or if you get Ark of the Covenant, or if you're France for some reason, or something like that. That's all it does. It's definitely weak compared to the other aspects of the game, production,
like
or science, you know, trade. I mean, do you want your city producing hammers, or beakers, or culture? Like, if you get to pick one of those three to pump up in an average game, which are you going to pick? How often would you pick culture? You'd never pick it.
Yeah. In your opinion, it's an added advantage to culture when it rarely does happen. It's just raw with it.
Yeah. Just having monarchy doesn't seem like that's really enough. You'd have to have monarchy and probably be at four.
Maybe got Angkor Wat also or something. But then that would give you the Great Wall. So it was something that made the culture big.
Yeah. Maybe you got free temples or something.
You got something.
I wouldn't be that stressed about it. I mean, the game does that. You know, it's programmed it that way so that if you haven't made contact,
well,
you just get...
it's hard to imagine that they would intentionally program in the fact that a person can expel you without you actually having met them.
But they did. It works the same with the AI. If you come up to Paris at a certain time early in the game, the culture can be so big, and if they don't send any units your way, you have no way to make contact, and you can't go into the culture and attack the city.
Sometimes it happens, but sometimes when you get to that culture, you know, it'll start diplomacy, and AI always accepts diplomacy.
I don't agree with letting diplomacy time out, but you're talking about using the menu, right? And not talking about when two units meet each other.
When you click in the menu and actually go diplomacy that way. I think this situation was the latter of what you just said. He couldn't get in and give war, so he tried to contact them through diplomacy, I think.
But can't you just pick go away, I'm busy on diplomacy? He doesn't even have to let it time out.
Yeah.
He can just pick go away, I'm busy. So basically the opponent, England player, is responding to the game's inputs. He doesn't have to let anything time out. Maybe he was, but he didn't have to. He can just pick go away, I'm busy every time, and that's all he's doing. And I mean, that seems legitimate to me, that if you're just clicking the buttons on the menus that the game's presenting you with to say, no, you have to pick this other option on the menu in order to play fair, that doesn't seem right. So
right, but I could have the Great Wall and contact you, and it'll allow you to go to war with me. That actually happens. You know what I mean? So sometimes it didn't get programmed correctly or something.
Well, the Great Wall one's quite interesting because you get this scenario where somebody, let's say you discover Angkor Wat, and then you go to them, oh, I want to find out if it was you who got Angkor Wat. Let's say you weren't paying that much attention. So you send them a message to say, hey, did you get Angkor Wat? And then they're like, no, I'm not going to talk to you because I don't want you to know whether I got Angkor Wat or not, or because I automatically refuse to talk to you no matter what. But then, if you then attack them when they've got Angkor Wat, have you now cheated? You know what I mean?
Right.
I think bottom line is if you're playing against forum members, they're not going to teach you anyway. You just have to get the rules straight and they'll run with it.
That's true.
Recorded for episode 45 with Scotty X and Japanese.
Something which we've tested on the forum before, but I think a lot of people probably haven't properly read the thread or haven't understood it, which relates to what your battle odds are when you're fighting another unit. And it's particularly important if you're using something like a catapult against Archer, let's say. Over 200 odd tests, we've basically proven that the odds are not what it says on the numbers. Catapult, let's say the catapult attacks at 6 for whatever reason and the archer's defending at 6. It's not 6 versus 6, 50% chance of winning. It's 6 versus 6 on the first battle, and then the archer gets another chance. There's a correction factor in there so that on the third battle, I think, you may be much more likely to win, maybe on the second one as well. But the bottom line is that the archer has got a big advantage over the catapult because you've got one hit point as a catapult and he's got three as an archer. So that means that when you trundle on up there with a catapult and try and attack his archer, or when you come up with a knight and try and attack his archers and things, it's quite likely you're going to lose there. So if you've got three hit points and you attack three versus three, if you can think of the way the probabilities are distributed, if anyone's got a statistics, if you've got a three attack unit and you're attacking a three attack unit, so maybe you've got a warrior attacking another warrior, it's less likely you're going to get an unlikely result. So if yours is vet and his is not vet, it's more likely that you're going to win in that battle than if it was one versus one. So if you have a galleon attacking a galleon, it's now one versus one, one hit point versus one hit point. So you're much more likely to get an upset.
I see. Okay, that's why the galleon loses to the galley.
So basically, you'll notice after 2000, when it's unleashed that, so you no longer have the guaranteed wins, you're going to start seeing, you know, your galleon attacks a non-vet galleon, or maybe any of these other things, galleon versus galley, or cruiser versus galleon, and you'll find that you can actually lose some of these battles, which you would consider ridiculously improbable if you're using a horse army against another horse army. The other thing that you'll notice is that when you've got a horse army attacking a barbarian, it's actually quite likely you're going to get your horse army injured. if you think about it, the barbarian has 3 hit points. You attack him 1, 2, 3. He gets a chance to injure you 3 times. Probably you're still protected by some sort of guarantee. Like you've got a guarantee at 2,000 if you're twice them. You've got a guarantee at about 0 or so if you're 4 times them. You've got another guarantee later on, I think. So you're probably still guaranteed to get a win, but you're still quite likely by one of those barbarian units to get injured. Doesn't matter so much if you're a galleon, of course, he's just 1 hit point. We had a discussion recently. They were saying, oh, why is my horse army, my non-vet horse army, I think it was, constantly getting wounded by barbarians or by warriors or something? And I demonstrated that they said, oh, about 50% of the time it seems to get injured. And my response to that was, mathematically, 50% is exactly the correct probability. Because they got, it was 6 versus 1, I think, they were talking about. So I don't know if it was a barb on a hill or something, or whether it was warrior. But anyway, the bottom line is 6 versus 1, 50%.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a slight sort of adjusting factor, so it's probably a little less than 50%, but pretty close. From my testing, when we were attacking knights versus warriors, I think, there was a certain combination of battles that just didn't occur, so a certain animation that didn't occur, so there was an adjusting factor in there just to keep it a little bit closer to the odds that they had, but it doesn't change it too much. For the most part, the better rule of thumb than looking at the numbers is to use that, well, they get 3 chances, I get 2 chances, knight versus archer sort of methodology.
Right. You also see a unit like catapults. Cat armies have 2 hit points.
Mm.
Horse armies have 2 hit points. Legion armies have 3 hit points.
Our testing was done with single units, so because it's much faster to do it that way, but yeah.
Right, but if you break it down to single units, one legion has 3 hit points. It's like a warrior. And one archer has 3 hit points. That's why that attack is so deadly, because when you hit with your legion that hits with an 8 and it has 3 hit points, it's better than a 9 versus 5. Your 8 versus 5 is actually better because you got 3 hit points.
Yep, that's right. Even more powerful than the numbers suggest. Good for the Spanish and anyone else who can add bonuses to there. Good for getting when you get Sam's castle and you're using religion, for example, and you can get those legions and things up.
When you get Sam's castle with them, it stinks.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, Sam's castles affects your naval support also, so.
Yeah.
Now you got single archers hitting with like 10 or something, something crazy, 9.5 or something.
Have you investigated that thing where you can give naval support to your naval fleets?
I've never been in a situation where I've actually done that, but I think it was Itch that was saying he did it, and if you play with the Americans, I could see that happening, but with any other civ, it's just usually not logical, but...
Well, it definitely works, and there are scenarios that doesn't work all the time, but it definitely can work. If I could regularly figure out how to do it, there would be a scenario where, so let's say you've got a galleon fleet out and the other guy has a galleon fleet out, right? You provide naval support to your other galleon fleet in order to get its attack up, and then he attacks it or you attack him. All of a sudden, you're very likely to win that battle. You don't need to take the risk of throwing your galleon fleet at his and then try again later on, because you might lose 2 battles in a row. Your odds of doing that are, you know, maybe 25% if you're equal of losing the 2 in the row. But if you give galleon support to your other galleons, then your odds of winning could be really good. In fact, you might even be able to go a single galleon, vet galleon, against his galleon fleet and beat it with the single, and therefore your risks will be way down.
Yes, yes. This is strategy that you need to know.
I was playing a game against Moss Rocks where I was seriously considering I should rush a galleon fleet in order to give support to my galleon fleet, because that battle was going to be what decided the game, basically. I couldn't afford to lose. If I didn't do that, then I would lose my galleon fleet there. That would mean that I didn't get my other galleon fleet around, and then he'd clean me up by the time I was back ready to go and do something else with my other galleon fleet. So if I rushed it over there, no units on it, that sort of thing, in order to provide some support, then he probably wouldn't even dare to do the 9 versus whatever number that I end up getting, 13.5 or something. That would probably be the game for me.
For more information about RevCast, Sibling Shows Polycast, and Modcast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Okay, are we good to go?
I don't know. I think so.
We should probably restart.
Okay, we can restart if you want.
All right, we can keep going. It'll be fun. Dan will like this.
Dan will like this. He cuts this up and he files it all away.
Dan the man. How do I turn the volume up on this bit?
This is a family show. We don't say b.
God damn.
Record date.
Disordered 2012-2013.
Civilization Revolution sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.